Go ahead.
Well, good evening, everybody, on this lovely, soft June evening. So my talk tonight, I have titled My Journey Through Breast Cancer. I've been giving a lot of thought to it. I wanted to start by talking about the Han, which we use to introduce the sitting period. And the Han is a wooden board that's hit with a mallet, and it starts to sound 10 minutes before the sitting period. And it goes through three rounds, and each time it gets a little bit faster and a little bit more intense. And then the last hit of the Han is followed by the meditation bell. The instructions on the Han read, "Great is the matter of birth and death. Quickly passing, gone, gone. Awake each one, awaken. Don't waste this life." That line, "don't waste this life," always sort of hits me in the solar plexus. We have a very limited time in this plane, and the importance of really using our life, seeing our life as both mortal and as this incredible opportunity. So I think of the Han as a sort of cosmic wake-up call, and really for me, that wake-up call has come in the form of breast cancer. The journey began 3 years ago in January 2019, when a routine mammogram showed a dark spot in my left breast. I was 69 at the time, as mammograms are not considered so essential after the age of 70. I had gone in wondering whether this was going to be my last mammogram. 2 days later, I was called back to come for an ultrasound with a cancer specialist. The waiting room was quiet, with each woman pensive, locked in her own thoughts. I looked around the room and felt my connection to these women. We were heading into the unknown together. 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer during their lifetime. And while the treatment has greatly improved over the last years, it's still one of the leading causes of death. There was one young woman there in the waiting room who was reading Braiding Sweetgrass. We briefly spoke about what an outstanding book it was. And I thought to myself, it was so unfortunate to be young and facing this. The ultrasound did indeed show a growth, and the technician left to speak with the radiologist. He returned to the room and asked if I would like to have a biopsy of the concerning area. It wasn't a question, of course. It was more like choiceless awareness. I needed to know if this was a benign or a malignant growth. The radiologist finished the biopsy and told me to make an appointment with my doctor for a week hence, when the lab results would be back. I left the lab contemplating my mortality. Like facing the wall in our practice, there's no place to hide. Time slowed down, and the distractions of daily life melted away. There was a sort of elemental question: how do I want to go forward? The response was curious: I don't want to miss my own death. My long meditation practice and my life has been characterized by busy mind. My thoughts are usually preoccupied with organizing everything, planning my day, caring for some people, resisting others, worrying about the state of the world, celebrating wonder and beauty, and endless distractions. This makes it hard to attend to the moment, the one immediately in front of me. Cancer really helps to focus the mind. When I returned home, I began by telling my husband, Harold, of the probable diagnosis of cancer. We began our conversation of how it would be if I died first. I'm 9 years younger than my husband and generally in better health. The assumption we had been working on is that I would outlive him. That is the thing about assumptions and expectations. They are just untested thoughts. I went to the local library and looked for a book on dying. My eyes immediately settled upon the Dalai Lama's book titled Advice on Dying and Living a Better Life. I took it home and read it, savored it, and tried to do a number of the practices that come from the Tibetan tradition. The Tibetans, I believe, more than any other religion, have focused on death, and in particular, the moment of death or the bardo of death. The belief is that it is a juncture between life and death. You have a choice or an opportunity to affect your future reincarnation. That is, if you're not swept away by the intensity of the moment or the karmic pull of your life's energy. The three immutable truths in Tibetan Buddhism are, first, death is inevitable. Two, the time of death is unknowable. And lastly, at the moment of death, all that matters is your practice. One of the exercises I tried repeatedly was a visualization of the stages you go through before and after death, the death of the body. The first four stages lead up to your passing. They are: one, mirage, or seeing life as a dream; two, smoke, or how our vision is clouded; three, fireflies or sparks, clearing or awareness; four, fire, cleansing. So this is what the body goes through as it is dying. The next four are the stages happen immediately after your death, or in the colloquial phrase, they are near-death experiences. They are passing through light. The first is white light. The second is red light, or a sort of tangerine light. The third is black light. And this is followed by clear light. I actually sort of thought about this, how it was like a fire. I have a wood stove. I often make fires. And that how a fire starts by, it builds up, there's all this smoke, and then there's the sparks and it comes through, and then the fire takes hold, and then the light itself goes through different stages. White is hot, red is when it's starting to burn down, black is when it's finished, and then the final clearing. I also hung on to the Bodhisattva vows like a lifeline in a rocky sea. These vows are taken formally during Jukai or lay ordination ceremony, and we repeat them at most services. They are: beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. I set a clear intention that I wanted to have my Bodhisattva vows as the last thought in my mind when I underwent general anesthetic for the partial mastectomy I would have 8 weeks after my original mammogram. I should also clarify that I was diagnosed with an early stage of cancer, and the prognosis was very positive for a complete recovery. So this was a sort of dress rehearsal. But I'm running ahead of myself. Back to the everyday world, decisions had to be made. Who to tell and how? I began with my family, my children, siblings, and then I decided to go sort of public. I started a sort of a blog of my experience, which I emailed to about 25 people. I wanted to take others along on the journey. My daughter, Leah, whom I think a lot of you may know, said she wanted to come home and do some art with me. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to create Indra's net to hang above my bed. Indra's net is an ancient Indian legend. It goes that in the realm of the god Indra is a vast net that spreads infinitely in all directions. At each intersection of the net is a multifaceted jewel that reflects every other jewel. In Mahayana Buddhism, this is a metaphor that illustrates the interpenetration, interbeing of all things. Leah arrived bearing crystals, silver thread, gold hangers, and we wove the net together. On the day of my surgery, my surgeon was held up by an emergency procedure, so my operation was delayed by about 7 hours. It was a long day without food or fluids for about 24 hours, but I passed the time peacefully, mostly in quiet contemplation. As I was undergoing the sedation, I was trying very hard to remember my bodhisattva vows, but as the sedation took hold, I could feel it all slipping from me, and I could no longer even remember the words. My recovery from the operation was fast and easy. My surgeon proclaimed that I had the very best results possible. The oncologist later confirmed this and told me that I had a 5 to 10% chance of breast cancer returning in the next 10 years. With these odds, I declined any further treatment. However, there was this niggling doubt that remained. At the moment of truth, when I was undergoing sedation, I had not been able to remember my vows. In retrospect, I saw how much ego there was involved in my wanting, grasping to control my thoughts. And even if these thoughts were about remembering my vows, as the acute phase of cancer treatment passed, and with a prognosis of full recovery, the presence of breast cancer receded from my mind. During the last 3 years, there have been many pressing things in my life. A pandemic that restricted all of our activities. My husband's health took a sharp downward turn with a diagnosis of congestive heart failure and probable Alzheimer's, the death of a beloved friend, just to name a few. This last Christmas was a particularly low point for me, never the best season or event for me. This was exacerbated by the return of public health restrictions due to the new virulent strain of COVID. I had a feeling of being trapped watching my husband's brilliant mind decompose. My meditation practice seemed to be little more than an interlude of sleep. Despair was the word I used to describe my mental health condition to my close friends and family. I was in a hole and digging it deeper. I decided to cancel any holiday cheer. No decorations, no cards, no presents. I told my daughter and her partner not to come. During the next month, I pulled myself somewhat out of this trough, but what really flipped my mood happened 1 month later. On January 25th, 2022, I went for another routine mammogram, and the shocking news was that the breast cancer was back, now in both breasts and possibly the lymph nodes. The first thought that flew through my mind was, when they confirmed the lumps were probably invasive carcinoma, was, but my husband has Alzheimer's. I can't do this. I have to be well. Harold was the first person I called from the hospital with the news. When, somewhat panicked, I told him of the prognosis, he replied, "Well, what I can do is be calm." That was exactly what I needed. Somehow we would manage. I also decided I would ask for and accept all offers of support and love. This is something that's not so easy for me. It meant being vulnerable and open. The result was we were cocooned in love, sustained by many acts of kindness, and blessed in numerous religious traditions. My sister Isabel gave me some sage advice when she told me that it's kindness to others to let them know how they can help. A book I found extremely helpful at this time was titled "Life is a Near-Death Experience" by Akan Sona, the abbot of Birken Forest Buddhist Monastery in BC. The 60-page manual outlines the skills for facing illness, aging, and dying, which are, as we know, the main sources of dukkha and suffering, as proclaimed by the Buddha. Akan writes of how to prepare your mind when facing a life-threatening situation and of the importance of really putting fear aside and focusing on your best intentions, good works that you have done, and above all, that change is the nature of the universe. He also recommended, when people asked how they could help, that you say to them you would like them to visualize you as well, happy, and at peace. I put this message out far and wide, and many people replied that they had really tried to do this. The last paragraph of the book reads, "Sometimes it takes a dramatic shift in our lives to set us on the spiritual path. Through it all, we have a choice. The Buddha asks us to choose calm and ease in the face of fear and delusion. The days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time?" These words echo almost exactly the inscription on the Han, which are, "Great is the matter of birth and death, quickly passing, gone, gone. Awake each one, awaken. Don't waste this life." A phrase that circled in my mind was, "Switch drama to dharma." I could certainly feel the allure of seeing myself as the tragic heroine, the victim of a disease that I had not earned, and planning my own funeral. I knew in the marrow of my bones that playing this role would only enhance the difficulty. I chose equanimity and trust, and even though I had no idea what would come to pass, it would be all right in some unfathomable way. Also, I didn't want to see myself in battle with cancer or view my breasts as the enemy. The cancer is just cells of my body that are growing out of control. The cancer is literally me. I focused on letting go of my breasts with gratitude and love. They had served me well, allowing me to breastfeed my babies, which had been one of the most rewarding experiences of my life, to have some feminine shape and to give my husband some small pleasure. I turned to the gentle, joyous teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh and reread Being Peace. As a matter of fact, a sort of coincidence, Thich Nhat Hanh died on January 22nd, and it was that book that I took to the appointment on January 25th, when the tumors were biopsied, which is a painful and discouraging process. The first line of this book gave me the solace and help to find my direction. They read, "If we are peaceful, if we are happy, we can blossom like a flower. And everyone in our family, our entire society, will benefit from our peace." I sought the wise counsel of our teachers, Michael and Kate. How blessed we are to have these two wonderful bodhisattvas. They placed my name on their home altar, included me in well-being services, and I felt they really had my back. 6 weeks, 2 days after the revealing mammogram, I faced the same surgeon as the first time, and Dr. Emerton Coughlin. I had her 3 years ago. The operation was for a double mastectomy with lymph glands removed. I would be left with an incision that crossed my entire chest, and all breast tissue right up to the collar line would be removed. I had a lot of faith in her and knew that this was the best course of action. When I underwent sedation this time, I didn't find myself obsessing about remembering my vows. I knew I could not control the experience, but I had a profound sense of equanimity, of peace, of love, and that it would all be fine in some unfathomable way. And it was fine. My post-operative recovery has been almost miraculous. I've had a sense of well-being and gratitude for just being alive in this wondrous mystery we call life. I fervently hope that even as the cancer recedes from the forefront of my mind, I will carry it in my heart, like Thich Nhat Hanh's words, "If we are peaceful, if we are happy, we can blossom like a flower. And everyone in our family, our entire society, will benefit from our peace." I have titled this talk, "My Journey Through Breast Cancer," but I'm well aware that this journey is not exclusive to me. Millions of people have walked this path. Nor did I take this journey alone. I have traveled with the love and assistance from friends, family, communities, sangha, teachers. It has been guided by the competent and caring attention I received from the professional healthcare providers. And the many sages, ancient and new, have shone the light of the wisdom to make the way clear. Ultimately, it is the journey of life seeking well-being. I want to thank you all.
Is our mic on so we can?
Yes.
Vicky, thank you so much for sharing your words and your journey with us so beautifully. Would you be comfortable with people asking questions?
If you would like that, or I also have a couple of questions, would you prefer that?
Oh, with Zen Talks, let's see, do people have questions or reflections they'd like to share with Vicky?
Kate. Hi, Vicky. I would just like to thank you for your courage in sharing your experience. Illness, death, dying, aging, there's a lot of things that I'm afraid of, and to hear your courage in the ways that you helped yourself and sought ways to help yourself, and Yeah, just that you could, you know, face the surgery and everything with equanimity. Like, I really I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you. The courage actually came like a blessing. I can't, you know, it wasn't something that I summoned. It was just there. Augusta?
Thank you, Vicki. What I'd like to know is life different for you now? And if it is, how?
Well, I do definitely carry more of a sense that, you know, time is limited. I'm also 73 years old. And that there's really no reason to hold myself back from doing whatever needs to be done right now. I think it's actually helped me let go of fear a little bit in general.
Else here or on Zoom?
Oh, I am.
Go ahead,
Seth. Oh, yeah. Actually, I have a family member who's kind of going through the similar beginning stages right now of figuring out what to do about what potentially might be breast cancer. And I was just curious if you had any advice on what to like maybe offer to that person to help them through this like beginning part of their journey.
Well, thank you. There's actually tremendous resources because the breast cancer is so common. There are wonderful resources. One organization that I think is really good is called Inspire Health, and it's for both. It's not just for breast cancer; it's for people who are going through cancer and their caregivers. And you can have get everything from doctors who will go over diagnosis with you, exercise, food, meditation. It's a very, very valuable resource. And also, I mean, it very much helps to have a good family doctor, obviously. Not everybody is blessed with that. I am, but it's really good to have, you know, professional care that you really can trust.
Thank you.
Anyone else? If not, Vicki, you had some questions. I did.
What I thought, the couple of questions that I thought is, one, to what do you turn for healing? Or two, what helps you blossom? Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, shall we take, I think we have time to do some small group talking circles. Those questions, and if we can divide up here in the Zendo, and maybe we can divide up the folks.
Can you repeat the two questions again, please?
Would to repeat the questions?
Yes, please.
To what do you turn for healing? Or the second one is what.